Hello, everyone. Today is a special day. I have Kevin Annette online with me, calling from the United States and very anxiously awaiting to hear his update on the current last round of common law court hearings back in April 7th, which has just reconvened as of May 5th. And for those of you that are not familiar with Kevin Annette, he's an internationally acclaimed whistleblower and a Nobel Prize nominee who also established the International Tribunal into Crimes of Church and State. He has helped depose one pope and is now threatening that of another, and has definitely brought forth the awareness to the entire world of the very, very serious situation regarding child trafficking and pedophilia within the Catholic Church especially. And for those of you that have not listened to my radio show before, this is Alexander Metters of GalacticConnection.com. You can always hear this if you haven't caught it live. You can always catch my interviews up on the BBS radio channel or just directly on the web page itself. So, hello, Kevin. How are you?
Hi, Alexander.
Good to hear.
It's really good to be back with you.
That you're alive and well.
Yeah, finally. It's good.
Are you happy to be back?
Oh, I'm very happy. Yeah, I was in Europe for almost a month doing a lot of really important work and meeting groups in France, in Belgium, Spain. All of these groups are working to bring cases against the Vatican for child trafficking. And in fact, I met with some Belgian politicians who are actually going to be helping us with this work. So things are working at a much higher level now. We actually are setting up a training program now for common law sheriffs in 10 countries. We have over 90, as of today, over 90 volunteers who want to do this training to actually enforce the warrants of these common law verdicts, you know, against the popes and various other high officials. So it's really exciting. It's really taking off.
That's fantastic. Can you list for the audience, since I do have a very good world population that listens to my shows, can you list off the countries that have come forth, the 10 countries you mentioned?
That's right. It's Canada, the United States, Ireland, England, Holland and Belgium, France, Spain, Italy, Australia, and I'm trying to remember if there's another one.
Somewhere, probably South America, maybe? No?
That's right, Mexico. I'm sorry. I forgot Mexico.
Okay. Yep. God, so we're really making some progress here, and I think the first question right out of the gate is, I know that you just reconvened with the new set of common law court hearings. How is that going? Can you share anything with us on that?
Yeah, there was actually the second common law case against the present Pope Francis, Jorge Bergoglio, the Archbishop of Canterbury, Justin Welby, and the head of the Jesuits, Adolfo Pichon. That case began actually last month in Brussels, and it's had two sets of hearings. It's heard from eight eyewitnesses already, including people who were direct participants in this thing called the Ninth Circle. It's an actual child sacrificial cult where apparently it's obligatory for popes to participate in these rituals.
Wow.
And this is not only from eyewitnesses. This is from actual documents that have been submitted to the court from the Vatican archives themselves. And, you know, it confirms that this cult has been operating for several centuries. And we received these testimonies. We had to do it in camera in closed sessions because of threats being made against, you know, people in the court and serious attempts to actually disrupt the court. So what happened was there was two of these sessions. The prosecution presented a lot of this evidence, and, in fact, we posted it up at itccs.org, the tribunal website, the Tribunal into Crimes of Church and State. And these were, you know, kind of summaries of what the prosecution's case was against these individuals. And the court is actually in the process of recessing right now to allow it more time to do research and to come up with more witnesses. There's a tremendous amount of information they've had to deal with and with very limited resources. And so it's, you know, this is going to take longer than we originally figured. It'll probably be many months, you know, this trial.
I bet, because you really are climbing to the very, very top of the ladder with who is responsible for these atrocities, aren't you?
Absolutely, and you know, the net keeps getting wider all the time. One of the, to give you an example of that, one of the names that's come up is this Judge Fulford. He's a high court judge in England. He's actually the Queen's advisor on constitutional issues. He's a judge in the International Criminal Court in Europe. And, you know, that's the UN-affiliated group. It turns out that he is a participant in this cult as well, and he's an advocate. He's very public about his attitude that child abuse is okay. I mean, he's part of a group called PI, called Pedophile Information Exchange, who advocate the lowering of age of consent to 4 years old, if you can believe it.
Oh my.
So in other words, it's legalizing child rape. And he's an open advocate of this. He's also been named as a participant with royal family members at these cult activities that have occurred at places like Carnarvon Castle in Wales, the Holyrood Castle in Edinburgh, places like that that are connected to the British royal family.
Good God. And I would imagine that some of these historic castles and governmental buildings, are they not attached with the same underground tunnels as the Catholic churches?
Very much. And as a matter of fact, these are the two main locations that eyewitnesses have been sharing in their testimonies in Brussels over the last number of weeks. Time and again, you hear different witnesses saying the same thing, that the ritual torture and rape and killing of children occurs again and again in the catacombs or the basement areas of large Catholic cathedrals, Notre Dame Cathedral in Paris, the largest Catholic cathedral in Montreal, Canada, called Marie Reine de Le Monde, the Mary Queen of the World. In the cathedral there, every August 15th, there's ritual slaying of children, according to a participant. So Catholic cathedrals are one of the places, but also castles connect, you know, that have a history of this activity going over centuries.
Oh my God. It just, you know, when you think you have it all figured out, it just keeps getting deeper, doesn't it?
It really does. And, you know, I've been doing this work for over 20 years, and it's blowing me away hearing some of these stories, things I couldn't even imagine in my worst nightmare. I mean, one example is the part of this ritual, and this was confirmed by, again, different eyewitnesses, one based in New York, Toos Nieuwenhuis based in Holland. All of these people as young girls were participants in it because their parents were part of this intergenerational satanic cults that are part of these networks. And what these eyewitnesses kept saying over and over is that the requirement of the participants is that they have to not only rape children, include often newborns, but then kill them, chop them up, and drink their blood or consume their flesh. And it's a requirement. And if you don't take part in that, you're killed on the spot. Hearing these people talk and just having them, they showed me pictures of these individuals, people like Cardinal Elfrink, he was a Catholic cardinal in Holland, Prince Bernhard, who helped set up the Bilderberger Group. When you look at the pictures of these people, they're like not human. I mean, there's no way that I can describe these people as being human beings.
Well, I don't think they're human either. And, excuse me, I started doing a paper on the facial features of all of the congressmen, all of the heads of states, all of the heads of churches. And there was no question that they all look similar.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it gets back to David Icke's whole, you know, presentation that there's another species that's running this planet. And when you look at them, you can tell. And you can see the hatred and the rage and the darkness in their eyes.
Yeah. You know, I in a lot of the work I do, I never dispute people's different theories because there's too much division and divide and conquer going on. I think all of these things are possible. It's not so much who they are as what they're doing. We know, regardless of whether they're from another planet or whether from among us, their aim is clearly to control and subjugate the human race. And one of the main ways to do that is through traumatization at a young age. So this isn't just random sick activity. This is aimed at a way of controlling the population. And there's no easier way to do that, of course, than to have people living in a state of fear, having been tortured and knowing that your children could be taken at any point and tortured in this way. I often see this in the Aboriginal world, in the native communities. This is how people are kept in line. A lot of the child trafficking that occurs today, based in native communities, is, you know, organized by chiefs on government payrolls. It's a way that they're acting at the behest of the government to keep their people in line so that the, you know, the resources they're sitting on can be gotten to more easily. So this has a lot of repercussions beyond just the satanic aspect.
You know, it's very clear to me that they've put such an immense amount of strategy and time into the way in which they set up the Catholic Church and the Vatican, because it's absolutely brilliant. I was reading through some news articles that I would like to review with you today, and I was absolutely amazed at the brilliance in which they are campaigning themselves. And almost, you know, as if you can read between the lines of what they're really trying to say amongst their so-called secret councils versus the masses at large.
That's right. You see, there's in their language and in their body motions and everything, they're saying one thing to the people at large and another to their own group. That's very right. Yeah, there's a picture of Jorge Bergoglio the other day, and he was sitting on his papal so-called throne, and there were standing in front of him a group of 4 and 5-year-old children. They were just grouped around in front of him, kind of beneath him. And there's a very strong signal there, you know. It's like he, like all the other popes, took part in the Ninth Circle killings. And it's their way of saying, look, we're in charge here. We can do whatever we want to these children. You know, that's one example. Another is in the language itself. The word apology has two meanings in the English language. It can be, an apology can be, you know, regretting something you've done. But it also is a defense of your own actions. You know, like an apologetic means I'm justifying what I did. Mm-hmm. So when they say apology, they're saying it's being heard in one way by people because we want to hear it. We want to believe that the people who did these crimes are really seriously repenting and are going to be better now. That's what they know. We need to hear that, so they speak that to us. But in fact, what they're saying at the same time is we are not liable for any of these crimes. We can kill with impunity and we'll never be charged with anything. That's what they mean by an apology. You know, when governments and churches issue an apology, it's their way of saying we're indemnifying ourselves, we're setting ourselves apart from any possible prosecution.
And such pomposity. Now, you know, getting back to Judge Fulford, can you tell us a little bit about what have been the repercussions of that coming forward, the fact that he's participating in the pedophile information exchange?
Well, I can tell you exactly of repercussion. There's a case right happening in Stafford, England. It was posted. It's the latest posting at itccs.org.
Yeah.
He's a soldier, Vivian Cunningham. And he was a man in the Irish Guards. He's a black man from Jamaica. He joined the British Army years ago. He's in the Irish Guards. And he saw the notice on the Internet of the criminal conviction of Elizabeth Windsor, Queen Elizabeth, in our first court case, where she abducted 10 children from a Catholic Indian school in Canada, and these kids were never seen again. And, you know, and also as head of church and state in Canada, she's liable for all these crimes, so she was convicted. Vivian Cunningham read this. He read about the arrest warrants being issued by the Common Law Court against her, and he simply reported that to his captain, a Captain Morrell. Captain Morrell responded to him by saying, I don't doubt the evidence, but wondered if he would come to the hospital for an examination. And, you know, he, chain of command, he just did what his captain told him to.
Right.
They committed him under a British law, which says that it's a crime to accuse a member of the royal family or others of crime. And he's been held for 6 months under severe medication. They're giving him antipsychotic drugs. They won't let anyone call him. They've got him locked away in a hospital, St. George's Hospital in I believe it's Stafford, England. It's all up on their posting at itccs.org. Now, that's not accidental. They've done that several times to our group in Coventry, England, which is very active in doing the common law activity and in posting up our material all over England. You know, the very week that this information comes out about Judge Fulford, they attack. There's obviously a standing order to members of the British Army and others, that anyone who raises this stuff needs to be put away and incarcerated and drugged up so they don't ever say it again. this is in direct response to how successful we're being with this work.
Definitely. And, you know, this is such a modus operandi with even the stifling of free energy. From what I've heard, this is a very standard operating procedure for anybody who is about to expose something on a grand scale that will affect the major network.
That's right. And, you know, in fact, one of the people I met in Brussels, her name's Melanie, and she works with a network in Europe that protects targeted individuals. She was trying to get into the European Parliament a motion about directed energy weaponry, and they targeted her. They put her in a mental hospital for several weeks. They drugged her up, and she got out after a big hue and cry was raised. But this is the same kind of thing they do to people all over the world on these issues.
Well, Kevin, what do you suggest we do? I actually took the time to get St. George's Hospital phone number, which is 441785257888. It's 3 8s, and they're on Corporation Street in Stafford.
Right. Well, definitely have people call them up, demand that Vivian Cunningham be released. ITCCS in Brussels has already named Vivian Cunningham as a prisoner of conscience. He's being targeted for not even his beliefs, but having simply raised with his commanding officer the fact that Elizabeth Windsor is a convicted felon, and that under international law, British soldiers have an obligation not to obey the orders of a convicted criminal. And so their whole oath of allegiance is null and void. I mean, that's the point we've been making for months now. So we urge people to contact the hospital, demand Vivian Cunningham's release, and say, look, you guys are in violation of the law, British law and international law, by holding them like that.
I think that's a great idea, and I challenge everybody that's listening to this interview to please do so. They also have a Facebook page, but I didn't find any kind of website, Kevin. Is that correct?
Yeah, I've been told that as well. We do have Captain Morell's phone number, too, and it's 44 is the area code, for, or not area, it's a country code. 44 is England. And then you dial 777-080-2720. So that's 44 for the country, then 777-080-2720. And that's Captain Morell, M-U-R-R-E-L-L. He's the one who basically arranged the incarceration of Vivian Cunningham. And we need to know from this Captain Morell, was he following orders? Was he instructed to do that? Why did he lock away one of his soldiers simply for bringing to his attention this fact of, you know, Elizabeth Windsor's guilt and conviction?
I think that's a great idea. And the other thing I was going to mention to everyone is we can all see that through Kevin's work, things are really starting to unravel. It's definitely starting to shake some cages. So if you're going to go out there and take action, use your head, okay? You're dealing with a very sinister force that's been in control for a long time. The whole reason that he got into the situation he was in is because Morell actually said, this is what your post says, yes, I believe the evidence you have shown me, but is it okay if you attend a medical assessment to make sure you're okay? Wrong. You cannot trust these people.
No. And the fact is that they all know it's going on. That's the point. They know these crimes are going on. But, you know, it's interesting that we found that the more we press on this stuff, the less powerful they actually are in practice, because one of our other members in Coventry, David Compans, a couple of months ago was thrown in a mental hospital for doing exactly the same thing. He was posting the notices around Coventry about Elizabeth Windsor's conviction. They tried to section him under the British laws, which allow I won't call them laws. I'll say they're statutes. They're orders brought in by executive order in England, not even by a vote of parliament, that say basically you're mentally unstable if you accuse a member of the government or the royal family of crimes. We got them out in 3 days just by calling up the hospital. There were people that on their picketing. We made a big stink over it. They know that they don't want this kind of exposure when they're doing these things. So it's very effective to challenge them publicly in this way.
Outstanding. So all of you people over in Stafford, United Kingdom, please keep us posted and somebody take action and show them that we the people have the power. and we no longer want to put up with this. You know, I mean, it's not just a singular case. I mean, this is going on all over the world, and if we continue to do this, we set a precedence, right, Kevin?
Well, absolutely, and that's kind of lead into the whole issue of the common law training we're doing now. We put out an appeal just, less than a week ago for volunteers to come forward, and we've got almost 100 volunteers now in these 10 countries. We're organizing training workshops where people learn how to be common law peace officers. These are people who would perform citizen arrests of known criminals. They would issue the warrants, bring people into court, enforce the verdicts of the court. These are all very important roles to do. It's how we go from simply a conviction to the actual enforcement. And so that's a very important step we're taking. And we've got so much enthusiasm. People are writing to me every day and calling me up and just, you know, wanting to be involved in this. So that's something people can do in your local community. Form a committee of our common law movement and start forming your own common law juries into any issue that needs to be addressed.
I think this is so fabulous. And you know, a lot of people have written in to me and said, well, you know, how much meat can the common law court, so to speak, hold when it's not the land of the law, you know, the law of the land? And I'd like you to comment on that again.
Well, the fact is, you know, it is the law of the land, and people don't realize this because we've never been educated. We've been deliberately dumbed down and brainwashed to think that government statutes constitute the law, and they don't. A statute is a rule that the government brings in for its own administrative purposes or to raise money. You know, like, so any kind of what they call laws are not laws. They're rules or statutes, which can be revoked or repealed at any time. Now, one of the basic principles in the common law, and this goes back over 400 years, there's legal experts for centuries have been saying this time and again, judges and others. They say a statute only has binding authority if you give consent to it.
Wow.
Okay, so a cop stops you and says you've broken the speed limit. Okay, that's the statute he's enforcing, and he's there to collect revenue. That's his job. You know, issue a ticket to make money for the government.
Obviously.
That's all.
Yeah.
He's not there to protect your rights or anything. He's there as a revenue collector for the government. And he says, you've broken the law. And I said, well, show me the law that I've broken. And most of the time he can't even quote it because they're pretty ignorant of these things. But you can then come back and say, if I didn't endanger anybody, I've broken no law. And I have a Magna Carta guaranteed right of free public movement on the highways. So that's what I was doing. And you can then drive away. You see, if you enter into a contract by signing the ticket, that's what you've done. You've signed, entered into a contract with him that you have to pay this money. If you don't sign the contract, there's no authority there. It's like not walking into the courtroom. If you don't walk into their jurisdiction, they have no authority over you, and they know it. So they have to brainwash everyone to step into their jurisdiction by thinking that these statutes have some kind of authority over you. And if you don't consent, there is no authority over you. That's the point.
I'm so glad you brought the signature thing up, because people don't realize how much power is behind the moment they sign something.
Yeah.
That's
or give a name.
Yeah.
That's the other thing. If they'll always ask you, is your name this? You don't say anything, because the minute you've given the name that you were, you know, you were created as a, people probably know this who are listening, but the capital lettered corporation created in your name at birth when you were registered, that isn't you at all. That's the corporate fiction. And they say, are you that corporate fiction? And if you say yes, well, boom, they've got you. But if you say simply, let's say you're stopped and say, they say, are you Kevin Anna? They say, my name is Kevin, right? Or you can just say no. Don't ever say yes in that situation, because then you've entered into their agreement. It's funny, the word name, in the Bible, and all of this is biblical, that's the thing to understand. The word name comes from a Hebrew word, meaning it's the plaque you hang on a slave to identify them. That's what a name is.
Very interesting.
Yeah, so a name is the way that you're identified as a slave in the system. If you have no name, and it's interesting, in the Bible, God says, I am. I am who I am. I exist. I'm a freeborn soul, and I have no name. I just am. And as long as you do that, they have no authority over you. So,
oh, that's beautiful. That's one of the things we were just discussing the other day is the absolute significance of language. And
yeah.
How we have been dumbed down across the world as to how important it is to know the language that you're using or that you're signing off on.
Yeah.
And we are oblivious to so much of what's been presented to us, you know, deliberately. So.
Right. We have to educate ourselves, and that's the point. And unfortunately, people, you know, live in a quick fix culture. When they start getting into this, they say, okay, explain everything in 3 minutes and tell me what to do. Well, that's part of the slave conditioning. We're not here to tell you what to do. We're trying to awaken your mind so you can learn what to do yourself. And these are kind of guidelines along the road. But, you know, it's almost like we're addressing that minority of us who are already awoken to some degree and realize we've got to take action for ourselves. It's not going to be done for us by anybody.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to also bring up the delegation, you know, regarding your trip to Rome and London, and I thought it was really interesting. You mentioned that there will be a Jubilee Week set of actions from June 30th to July 6th. Can you talk a little bit more about that and also the fact that you have put the message out to everyone that you're recognizing that your life is in far more danger than maybe even before you thought? How are you addressing that right now?
Well, yeah, I had an example of this when I was in Ireland a few days ago. There was an attempt to gang stalk me and swarm me. Right, people were waiting outside the hotel for me when I arrived, and nobody knew about that hotel reservation. I did it over a computer, so obviously somebody read my computer and found. And only the only people can do that are, you know, corporate entities or government or church.
Right.
And there was a gang there waiting for me in Ireland. That's one example of the kind of attacks that are coming down now. Fortunately, we had other arrangements in place and other people there to help us, so we were able to avoid that. But that's only because we have a network going. And the thing you mentioned in the first week in July, the various Belgian politicians who are working with us now have said that they're going to come over with me to England. We're going to come in together as a group. We're going to have a video recorded. We're going to have a media group there with us. We're going to walk right through the front door and challenge them to try to stop us, because what we plan to do is to go directly to Buckingham Palace and these churches and other locations and enforce the stand-down orders. Now, these stand-down orders are important because the Crown of England and the Vatican to be convicted as criminal bodies. It means that all of their agents and officers have to stand down from their oaths of allegiance, whether it to be the Queen or the Pope or anybody. In effect, we're kind of dismantling the system, and we're saying, look, you guys have no legitimate authority anymore, and we're going to enforce that. So we call it Jubilee because the whole Jubilee tradition says that, you know, every 49 years, the society is to rest the way the earth rests, to recover. And we're saying it's time for these corrupt institutions to stand down now, so people can rebuild and do it in a fair and just way. So that's going to be a great public event. There are going to be actions happening at the same time, attempted citizen arrests on these convicted parties and that kind of thing. So that's what we're working towards. We figured that bold approach is the only way to go with this, because the more public we are, the more they tend to shrink into the dark because, you know, they operate through lies and fear. Those are their only two weapons.
Now, you know, I found the dates that you chose to be very, very interesting, especially from predictions and astrological standpoints. Is there a reason you chose those dates?
Those dates were actually arrived at by the kind of the governing body of the tribunal, and I'm not sure what the rationale was, but do you have more information what those dates represent? Because I was curious myself.
Yeah, because basically once June 21st on arrives, it's pretty much all bets are off, and I really do believe that the summertime from the summer solstice on is really a very empowering time for humanity if they continue to stand up and stand in their truth. They, you know, we are at a point of accountability where we're having to make decisions and choices. Do we want to go to, you know, do we want to stay in kind of the comfort zone, which isn't necessarily really resonating that well with us. Do you know what I mean? Like our higher consciousness. Or are we willing to really become courageous and stand tall in our truth? And this is very much supported from summer solstice on.
No, I think that that's all very true, and it's definitely a power time for sure. Now, I think the simplest way for people to do that is to realize that these authorities live through illusion. And they get us all to believe that they have an authority they don't actually have. The moment we begin taking back that power, and that means not even an obvious way, like not paying your taxes, but, you know, simply an inner recognition that they have no power, that we are the ones, the source is within ourselves. When we reclaim that, their authority starts to collapse. And I've seen that all over in a lot of the journeying I'm doing. A lot of the travels, I see that all over. And the biggest problem now is ourselves, that we've been conditioned to think, to defer back all the time. You know, they could arrest us or all of this nonsense. You know, the point is that in a situation where they're confronting us, every time we've invoked these stand-down orders, they've backed down.
Wow.
We've done church occupations in Canada for a number of years now, where we say that to the police when they show up. We say, you're supporting a criminal body when you try to defend these churches. We have every right to be here in these taxpayer-funded churches. You know, and every time the police back off, they do not try to evict us from the church or anything. So they know we're right. And that's an example of when you push the issue, you win. And people have to wake up to that fact and not be afraid.
You know, this is a perfect example of how everything is intertwining, because I'm not sure if you're familiar with Veronica Keane, but she has been working very diligently on a ley line project. And although it's not on a so-called 3D physical level with common law, it's etherically uniting a network of people together to send light and love and protection, you know, through these ley lines to cast out the darkness. And the fact that that's going on at the same time as you're doing this, it's very, very exciting. It feels as if you're coming to a place, Kevin, at the end of June, where you're going to have just a huge breakthrough by doing this.
Yes, and I think that I felt that for a while, and I know now that it's already begun.
Yes.
And, you know, so it's happening as we speak.
I agree. Now, tell us a little bit about, now, something went down on May 1st. You actually enforced an annulment order against the Church of Rome. Can you talk to us a little bit about that?
Yeah, that was, it started when I was over in Europe on Easter, which was April 20th, Easter Sunday. One of the power places in Europe, it was Maastricht, which is a community in Holland. It's the place they chose to sign the European Union Treaty back in 1990, the Maastricht Treaty.
Mm.
And it's not accidental, because that was a location where the very first Catholic/Roman church was built outside Italy in the 4th century. And it's we chose that place because it's the source of a lot of this power. Now, what we issued this thing, the Maastricht Proclamation, which basically said, you know, legally, the Catholic Church is already disestablished. It's a criminal body. It traffics human beings. It's committed murder. It launders money for criminal bodies. Therefore, it's a criminal organization. It has lost any kind of lawful authority. But spiritually now as well, I kind of completed the cycle of exorcisms that began in 2009 in Rome and basically said, spiritually, it's disestablished. It has no authority. It claims in its own doctrine that it was given the authority on earth by St. Peter. That, of course, is not valid. There's no historical evidence of that at all. But you notice on the symbol of the Vatican, they have these two keys, which is supposed to be representing the key to heaven and the key to earth. Well, basically what we said is that is nullified. That entire notion is out the window now. They have no authority even on heaven or on earth. And what that did is opened it up to now saying to people all over the world, you don't have to have any kind of association with this institution anymore. You can leave. It's kind of like the counterpart to what we say, you can form these common law courts, spiritually, people are not bound to these religious institutions at all anymore. And we're beginning to see it unravel. I mean, it's interesting, after that we did that, I began to get calls for the first time from people, like, for example, in Catholic churches in Ireland, wanting, like, these were diehard Catholics who were beginning to say, well, is it true? Like, before they would just condemn us. Now they're saying, send me more information. Where have you been getting that from Catholic priests? Now, I mean, that shows you that there is definitely something stirring.
That's huge. That's huge. Because that's rocking their whole foundation.
It is.
You know?
Yeah.
And you probably haven't seen this video, but there's a video entitled The Lie NASA Told. And what I find absolutely fascinating with what you just brought up regarding the papal keys is they do a dissertation on what they perceive to be the papal keys and how they represent the East and the West Gate. And they're basically like escape routes from the Matrix. And this was just officially, according to this video, the West Gate, which was the gate of the dark, you know, was basically blown up. It was shut down. And she was insinuating that, you know, the dark are trapped. They really have no escape plan at this point. And
right.
I find it very interesting that you're on a completely different, you know, layer of justice here. And it's all at the same time.
Yeah, it is. It's that convergence that's going on. You see it everywhere. And, you know, that's why the key now is to start thinking in a new way and living in a new way in the light of this new world we've been given. So, you know, that's, I think, the challenge for all of us now.
I totally agree. Now, talk to us a little bit about the seizure of the property and assets of the churches. I mean, how do you see that playing out with these people? I mean, I know you mentioned this before in the last interview, but are people really taking that seriously in various countries?
Oh, I give you one example. In Coventry, they've been doing that. They've been going into Catholic churches and inviting, for example, there's the main cathedral in Coventry. A woman called Rhianne and her group have been going in there with single moms and their kids and just occupying it. They've been using it as a kind of their own daycare center. And at first, you know, they threatened to call the cops and everything on them. They said, go ahead, this is public space. So they've kind of seized that, they've occupied that space. It's a matter of organization because, for example, in one of the jobs of the common law sheriffs who we're training now as we speak is they're going to be authorized to go in and seize those assets and property. Because don't forget, this is a criminal organization. The money that goes in that collection plate is being handed over to the mafia. It's being used to launder criminal money, to invest in criminal organizations all over the planet. The arms industry, Monsanto, I mean, the list goes on and on. So the citizens have the right to take back money that would be used, you know, in for criminal purposes. And this is what we're putting it, kind of the bigger framework we're putting all this stuff in, that, you know, you have to understand what the beast is. And so at that point, people are completely authorized lawfully to go in and do that.
That is amazing. Now, have you had any reports of that sort of thing going on in the United States?
We haven't had, for example, a specific story. Well, I did this in this church on this date.
Right.
And, you know, it's people are on other issues that's happened. Like, for example, on when I was working for years on the genocide of the Native people, we had, for example, Native folks in the Lakota region in South Dakota from the Pine Ridge Reserve. They seized, actually, several local Catholic churches and told the priest to get out, and he did. They reclaimed those churches. They did the same thing in the Six Nations territory in Ontario.
Right on.
They've had church seizures. Yeah, definitely. The Native people have done that. But again, it's like, it's this whole kind of myth that, you know, we don't have the right to do that, when in fact, it's the other way around. You know, they're the criminals. We have every right to take back. I mean, every church in North America is supported by taxpayers, you know, but on the condition that they operate as charitable societies. And as soon as they stop doing that and engage in criminal activity, well, all bets are off. So this is the point we keep trying to make with people.
Interesting. Now, you brought up the Vatican Bank at one point, and I just have to tell you this. I found a website. I thought this was really interesting, and I was doing some searching on the Vatican Bank just to see what's been going on with them. Now, get this, okay? 1 year ago, they announced that Germany's Ernst von Freiburg was named the new head of the Vatican Bank. Are you familiar with him?
Yep.
Okay. Okay. 10 months, then 10 months, so that was 12 months, 10 months beforehand, Pope Francis sets up commission to review activities of the Vatican Bank because an investigation began. Okay. Then another 10 months, the investigation goes even deeper. They start beginning to follow money smuggling and scandal involving the Monsignor. And then 6 months ago, another Vatican investigation takes place regarding laws that make public financing fully transparent to become more open. Now, 1 month ago, Pope Francis approves, I just had to ask you about this, continued existence of the Vatican Bank, a new plan and rules to be presented to the Council of Cardinals. I mean, I can't help but feel that your work is really affecting and putting a squeeze on them, along with a lot of other things that are going on the planet. But what I wanted to ask you was, what exactly is he alluding to as far as some new plans for the existence of the Vatican Bank?
Oh, well, there, all of that talk, don't forget, this is what you hear in the media is what they put out for public consumption. It's usually 180 degrees different than what they're actually doing. You know, it's like any politician or any spin campaign. It's designed to distract, so you're looking over there and you don't see what they're doing over here.
Correct.
In fact, what's been going on, we know this from a number of insiders in the Vatican. One of the people, in fact, who gave us those Jesuit documents about the Ninth Circle confirmed this, that they are doing kind of a smoke and mirrors campaign right now to keep people unaware of the fact that they are transferring major amounts of money out of the Vatican Bank into German and Chinese banks. And one of the reasons that we know that Ratzinger is still in charge and not Pope Francis is the figurehead, he's a caretaker showman. He's not actually the Pope, according to these people in Rome. He doesn't wear the papal ring. He doesn't live in the Vatican. He makes statements, you know, like he doesn't say anything wrong with homosexual priests, for example. He'll make a statement like that, and then the other cardinals will come out and say, no, he doesn't represent church policy. Well, how can he not if he was the Pope, right?
Correct.
So, in other words, he's not really the Pope. He's in there to distract from that Ratzinger is still very much in charge, hence all the Germans being appointed to run things.
Mm.
And it's really part of kind of a, on one level, this new alliance forming in the world between Russia and China, you know, geopolitically, and the Vatican is lining up with them. I think that's why Obama went over there and Queen Elizabeth to kind of plead for the Vatican to get back in, you know, in their camp. I don't think either here or there. The point is that this is all an indication of an institution of real crisis. And, you know, another example about that in terms of the, you know, the horrible hypocrisy going on now, Jorge Bergoglio, so-called Pope Francis, comes out and says, oh, no, we've got a new policy of not allowing child rape, okay, in the Catholic Church. He says that over and over.
Right.
The other day he came out, the Italian bishops came out and said, we will not report child rape to the police. I mean, they said that they're going to affirm this policy of crimen solicitanus that says priests and bishops will not report child rape when it happens. They'll break the law, in other words, and endanger children. The Pope came out and agreed with them. So, I mean, he says one thing to the press, and then within the church he turns around and continues to play the old game. So, I mean, that's an indication that things don't really change in Rome. They just are masters, especially the Jesuits. They're masters of deception, and that's what's going on.
They are masters. Now, it's interesting. I was going to ask you, you did the April 7th Court of Law, right? That's when it started, April 7th?
Yeah.
Okay. On April 4th, it says, this is one of the headlines, it says, no mandatory reporting in Italian norms for handling abuse allegations. The Italian Bishops' Conference encouraged its members to cooperate with civil authorities in cases of clerical sexual abuse, but said the bishops have no legal obligation to report abuse allegations to the police or other civil authorities. There it is in black and white. Right there.
Yeah, they're saying they're above the law, that they don't have to obey the law. Now, that's an honest statement of what canon law is. The church considers itself the only authority on earth. It says all other laws and governments are null and void, and the canon law is the only functioning law. That's how they view it.
Wow. Unbelievable.
You know, that, yeah, we can, that's why they know they can kill and rape children with impunity, because they're self-governing. So as long as governments allow them to do that and people allow them to do that, it's going to continue.
But I have to say, Kevin, I mean, the amount of press and publications that are coming out in order to kind of do the offensive campaign about all this trafficking is amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was doing a little digging. April 10th, okay, this is only a couple days later, Pope praises the Police Church Network to stop trafficking and meets with the victims. And I just wanted to ask you about this. Do you know anything about this?
Well, you know, when they say victims, those are officially approved people. Like we find, having worked with survivors groups, survivors of church rape for many years, in every country what they tend to do is find those survivors who are willing to play along.
Right.
And, for example, not sue the church and say, oh, we want to help and heal and recover and forgive, blah, 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 ad nauseum. Those people will get funded and recognition and all the media attention. Whereas the other groups who are saying, you know, children were killed, we want their bodies returned, we want to prosecute these people, they're blacked out. They're not funded. They're attacked. The media never report them. So there's really two groups that you're talking about. So, yeah, all of it is, again, the same old show, making people think that change is happening. Meanwhile, working to make sure it doesn't in the background.
Now, do you have any information? It says here Vatican was not ordered to appear before the UN committee. There's been an awful lot of articles about their meeting with the United Nations and adherence to their anti-torture treaties and all that. Have you gotten any kind of lowdown on that?
Yeah, well, I did a statement in New York a few months ago. It's up at itccs.org about all of this. In effect, what you see, there was a UN series of UN meetings that the Vatican was ordered to report to, and they were supposed to address things like give guarantees to the UN that they would start reporting child rape, that they would give the names of priests who had hurt children, etc. The Vatican basically didn't comply, and they said, no, we don't have to disclose any of that to you. And in turn, the UN said, well, that's not good of you. You know, we condemn you for that. But there was no enforcement at all because they don't have, you know, they chose, the UN could have done things like expel the Vatican from UN committees. They could have called on their, you know, affiliated countries to end the tax exemptions for the Catholic Church. All of this stuff, weapons they could be using against, you know, a child raping organization, and officially, you know, an official, their official policies to protect child rapists. None of that happened, and one of the reasons is the Vatican is a heavy funder of the UN, just like the IMF is. You know, and so, you know, it's a hand puppet show, you know.
Well, okay, now what about, this is a question I had for you. So the latest was Cardinal O'Malley. Are you familiar with this case? He was supposedly accused of clerical sexual abuse, and they're saying that they recommend stricter standards and all this stuff. And I was wondering, what happens to those that they make out as their, you know, poster board saying, oh, you don't want to be like this priest, or you don't want to be like this, you know, person. What actually happens to that individual? I mean, are they excommunicated from the church?
No.
You know,
because they're never excommunicated. No, they're put on pension and retired and put out of sight. They're not reprimanded in any way. You see, what they've done is not wrong in church canon law.
Uh-huh.
It's not a crime to rape a child under canon law. It's a sin. Sins can be forgiven. What the crime is to report it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like in the Mafia, you know, they have the law of silence, omerta, because the Mafia and the Catholic Church are the same organization when you look at who's really running it. It has for centuries. You know, and their law is, the big crime is to talk about it, not to do it. So, you know, the attitude is, okay, well, society's upset that we've hurt children. Okay, we'll take this guy and put him out of sight for a while. That's their reprimand, you know, of their own. And I know this is, it's true not just in the Catholic Church. All the churches tend to do this, you know, that they know they're above the law and they can do whatever they like.
It's just disgusting. God.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's abominable. I, you know, it. What I don't get is, you know, right at a human level, with when you're talking to people in the churches about this, and I was just talking to a woman in Nova Scotia who's doing work with us. She said, I went down to the local Anglican church and I tried to talk to them about these facts that you've proven about the crimes of these churches. The people were not horrified that tens of thousands of children had died. They were immediately picking holes. Oh, where'd you get your information? Oh, we can't stop giving money to the church. Oh, blah, blah, blah. There was no emotional reaction. There was no horror and outrage. So, you know, as long as you got that, then, yeah, these crimes are going to carry on.
Wow. Well, I mean, I know that from one level, you're going after the exposure and empowering people with the common law, but do you feel that the Vatican Bank has, you know, that's the other part, is the financial arm that keeps this going. Do you feel that they are experiencing a pinch in their funds?
Not really. I mean, there's a lot of thievery, you know, going on. They rob from each other all the time, and that's why they're feeling a pinch, not because the quote, faithful are stopping their funding. They pull in over $50 billion a year just off the collection plate. They get, in over 100 countries, they get taxpayers' money handed to them by these financial concordats. You know, taxpayers don't even know they're funding this criminal body. So it's not that so much as, you know, they're robbing from each other. And, you know, the classic case of the Vatican Bank, you know, the Pope who was murdered in 1978 basically the story was the Banco Ambrosiano, which is where he was from Milan, was getting ripped off by another section of the Vatican Bank, and he began to investigate that on behalf of his benefactors in Milan, and they killed him for it.
Wow.
He was killed by what's called the Holy Alliance, which is the Jesuit spy and assassination agency. They're also the ones that have been trying to shut down our court in Brussels, which is why we're operating under tighter security now. But the point is these thieves fall out among themselves, and this is the main source of their crisis right now, not because there's some kind of outrage happening from within the Catholic Church, although, like we said, there is beginning to have stirrings of that.
Incredible. And you had mentioned that this is historical, right, that Pope Benedict, who is so-called acting as the acting pope, but he really is not, this is historical for this to happen?
Oh, well, they've done this before. They've had two or three popes serving at the same time in history. They have this too. I know in Vancouver, one of the archbishops there had a nervous breakdown. He was probably because we were occupying his church all the time and talking about this stuff. But anyway, he went off to a hospital somewhere, and they brought in another archbishop to. It's called a coadjutor. They can rule alongside, you know, the other archbishop. So they can do that. Popes can do that, right? And it's like, you notice they make this big thing the other day of beatifying two popes. I thought it was quite hilarious. They turned John the 23rd into a saint.
I saw that.
He was the one who brought in, he expanded, you know, this policy crimen solicitanus that orders priests to cover up child rape. He expanded that back in 1962 at the Vatican Council there. He extended that policy to cover all orders within the Catholic Church, like the Franciscans, the Dominicans, everybody. So I guess, you know, you got to be a big crook to get turned into a saint, but, I mean, that was his kind of thing.
So, Kevin, you know, you know about these policies, and you know that they were passed and implemented in 1962. How can we get that more publicized? How can we get our hands on that information? Is it possible?
Oh, it's all printed. I mean, it's everywhere. All you have to do is type into a Google search, crimen, C-R-I-M-E-N, and it'll come up. It was leaked. The document was leaked to the London Observer 10 years ago. We've reprinted the whole document. People can go to hiddennolonger.com, and you go to appendix number 9, and it's all right there. Just give people the link. It's not so much not being able to give this to people. It's the mental resistance you get from people saying, oh, either that can't be true or, you know, what can I do about it kind of attitude. But we need to get that into libraries and schools, just out in the general public. And we are. I mean, there's thousands of people now who are aware of this now who weren't before. I would say even millions when you look at kind of the responses we're getting now.
I think this is such a great idea. So let's do this again. So you want them to go to hiddennolonger.com, right?
Yep. And then appendix
number 9. right?
Yep. Yep.
And that actually has all the legal language of what was passed in 1962 that basically makes child rape okay and lawful within the Vatican.
Yeah, it's called Crimen Solicitanus. It's actually been around since 1929 when the modern Vatican was created by the Italian dictator Mussolini by the Lateran Treaty. They created the Vatican Bank and this policy of Crimen Solicitanus at the same time. And it basically says, yeah, in I think Article 8 or 11, I can't remember which, it said that it refers to a pontifical secret, which means the Pope orders everybody to be quiet about this. And so it's coming right from the top of their organization. And it says that the police are not to be informed and the victim is to be silenced. Right. It says that in black and white.
Wow.
That it's to be kept within the church. So, I mean, if any organization did that, you know, told its members to protect child rapists, just imagine what would happen. But, you know, when you've got trillions of dollars at your disposal, you can buy justice.
Well, imagine what could be done if a network of people across the world unified their actions and plastered those all over the place. Because it's kind of like that saying where, you know, when you first put out information, they go into shock. And then they go into anger. And then after a while, it's like, oh, yeah, I know that's true.
Yeah, well, that's exactly what we need to do. In fact, Alexandra, we have leaflets that we hand out at Catholic churches all the time saying, you know, be careful. This is a dangerous place if you have a child or if you know of children. If they're raped here, it's going to be covered up. Every priest is involved in a criminal conspiracy to protect child rapists. So do not give money to this church. Do not bring your child in here. It's dangerous. We hand that out. We make reference. We give them the websites to the Crimen document. That's an important thing people can be doing. It's reaching people at the grassroots like that that really has the effect. So I would urge people to, they can write to me, Hidden from History 1, like number one, hiddenfromhistory1@gmail.com, and we can send you copies of these leaflets.
Fantastic. Oh, that's great. So I wanted to find out what has been the response after your final exorcism. I mean, what are you feeling as far as on a energetic level and on a physical level with the changes from that?
It's funny, when I was in Europe after it, I was going around in situations that were fairly dangerous, yet I felt very empowered, in light a lot of the time, just a lot of good openings happening. And I think that we are, you know, things change from the inside out. And I feel these institutions are crumbling from the inside out. You may not see it right away, but you sure feel it. And, you know, you go by a lot of these Catholic cathedrals, there'd be 10, 20 people in there on a Sunday. A lot, you know, people see through this now. And I remember I was with a group of people the day we went to the Maastricht, did the Maastricht proclamation at that church. We went down to another church down the road, and we began to hand this stuff out to people going in. And they weren't hostile. They were just amazed. They'd never heard about any of this stuff. And that's why there's tremendous opportunities here to educate people. But you've got to reach them kind of at the grassroots and not ever try to go through the institution or anything. Just reach people on a one-on-one and start educating them. That's really what changes things.
Really good point. And, you know, we don't want people to put themselves at jeopardy, and at the same time, if we all do this together, it really would be a moot point, wouldn't it, Kevin?
Yeah. I mean, we have, like I say, this is why we're setting up these common law groups to educate the community, but also set up courts to say you have the power now to do these things. You don't have to wait for politicians, you know, who are often funded by these criminals, cops and others. I mean, we are the law ourselves, especially when it has to do with the protection of children anywhere. That's absolute bottom line.
So you are so astute in the history of the Vatican and the Catholic Church, and I thought what I would ask you to do today is to review with us how did this institution gain so much power. Now, you know, I know on the one hand we relinquished our power, our authority to them, but I thought it would be really interesting to go over some of the key historical things that went down. You know, such as the Inquisition and things like that. And I know that you know so much about it. Would you be willing to do that?
Yeah, well, to really understand the Catholic Church, you've got to understand that it's really the Roman Empire. And all of the symbols, the terms, the Pope's title for himself, you know, Pontifex Maximus, Great Bridge. All of those were terms the Roman Emperor used. And what the Catholic Church really is not a Christian faith at all, because it doesn't believe that Christ is the mediator between humanity and God. They believe the Pope is.
True.
And that is not a Christian idea. That came from what was called the cult of Sol Invictus, which means the sun triumphant, the sun in the sky. And it was created by this Roman Emperor Aurelian in around 280 A.D., and it said the Emperor of Rome is both Deus et Dominus, which means God and Master. It means that the Roman Emperor is the master of everybody in heaven and on earth. And that Constantine adopted that title, and so has every pope since then, because the popes are really a new name for the emperors. So, you know, the Christian rhetoric fools people a lot of the time. They have to realize that you're dealing with the oldest empire on the planet. That's where a lot of their power comes from. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I mean, when you look at the history of the church, it was, you know, enforced its power constantly through the sword. And it has, you know, it repudiated the most basic teachings of Jesus about nonviolence. I mean, it's all there if you just read a bit of history. But the problem is we've had this kind of brainwashing going on where we think that a cross, for example, represents Christ when it doesn't. It really represents an energy grid. You see, the early symbol, the only symbol the Christian Church had for 300 years was the fish,
yeah,
which is really an infinity symbol when you look at it. Mm-hmm. It's an open-ended infinity symbol.
Good point.
That was replaced by the cross, which was really a grid pattern. When you have a grid system of streets in cities in the world because of the Roman army, when they came into an area, they would set up a Roman army camp, a grid network, and out of that towns evolved. But when you look at that energy, it's entrapment. It's like the symbol of the cross. You've got a man here impaled on a cross, his hands and feet, and those are the most sacred parts when you think of it. Our feet are attached to Mother Earth. Our hands are healing, means of healing and touching. They're nailed bloodily to this piece of wood. It's like pinning us into this grid, and it's channeling the energy, the spirit, innate in godness within us. It's trapped it. And so they had to murder Christ, which they did, and then took that energy and entrapped it into the church, which is like a substitute. And spiritually, that's what's been going on from the very beginning of the Catholic Church. And it makes perfect sense when you look at it, the way it operates. And so the power is derived from that. Like, you know, talking to Catholics, the fear that operates in them when you start saying, well, no, the Pope's a criminal. Well, he can't be. He's God. Well, open your Bibles. It says, call no one in Father in heaven, or call no one on earth Father, because you have one Father in heaven. I mean, it goes on and on. It's
right.
It, you know, and the Bible refutes the Catholic Church at every point, which is one of the reasons they used to burn anyone who would try printing a Bible in their own language. You know, it's obvious that when you look at the history, but it's our own mental conditioning have to overcome to look clearly at all that stuff.
Kevin, what do you think is the true underlying significance of King Henry VIII and the divorcing of so many queens, you know, regarding the Vatican?
Oh, well,
the truth.
You know, the very fact that a king said to Rome, well, no, I'm the head of the church, you're not, that sent out real shockwaves, especially it was happening right at the time of the Reformation, when Luther and Calvin and others were saying, you don't need a mediator of the church. Everyone can have that faith relationship with God directly. You don't need the church. That set off real warning bells, and that's actually why the Jesuits were created during the Counter-Reformation in the 1500s, to stamp that out. And one of the main tools they used was through propaganda and education. The Jesuits' whole strategy was to set up universities all over Europe to counter, you know, the Protestant Reformation and free thinking and humanism and all that. All of that is kind of part of the whole plan to keep their control over people's minds. And that's really what it comes down to.
And therefore, all of the immense amount of funding and work with the mind control.
Yeah, well, when you trace all that stuff, all of that mind control research originally came out of Nazi Germany, but when you trace it back even further, close Vatican ties, Vatican funding for all of that stuff. Even today, I mean, you look at the Knights of Malta, you know, this Catholic organization. Every head of the CIA, all of these doctors who worked for the MKUltra program, presidents, even Nelson Mandela, they're all Knights of Malta. I mean, it doesn't take too much research to find that out.
Right, right. Now, you mentioned something about the grid pattern. Are you familiar with Michael Tellinger?
Yeah.
Yeah, I went to one of his lectures here in my area, and I was just absolutely blown away. I just wanted to share this with the audience in case they haven't heard this. But basically, this grid is so much more than what we perceive to be, you know, like the grid around the planet or, you know, these ancient grid lines, ley lines. Basically, what they've done is they've set up every major city with, if you were to pull away from the planet and look down upon the way that they structured this, these streets and the major buildings and any location where there was a very large amalgamation of people, they basically set it up like a circuit board.
Yeah.
I mean, it
blew my mind. And, you know, the whole thing, the whole evolution has been, well, I wouldn't say evolution, it has been natural, it's been directed, but the whole movement has been towards making people part of a machine, components in a machine, you know. And so the only, it's funny, the corporation of the United States, not the United States of America, but the United States Corporation, its motto is E Pluribus Unum, which means for many, one.
Mm-hmm.
Turning the diversity of nature into one thing, machine. That's the corporate thinking. The opposite of that is from one many, from one source, there's infinite diversity in nature. And that's what common law believes, you know, as opposed to the whole corporate thinking. So it's really two totally different energy patterns of the planet. And, yeah, it's all, I mean, the Vatican kind of pioneered all that thousands of years ago.
I know. You know, it's like you got to take your hat off to them because they're absolutely brilliant in the way they put this whole thing together. But now, what is your feeling about the obelisk? You know, I mean, are they really empowering the Catholic Churches? You know, how do you
see that? Well, it's interesting you mention obelisk because when I was in Paris 2 weeks ago, we're standing right in the Place de la Concorde. And it's kind of in the center of Paris. And there's this huge obelisk, and they've got gold plated. And now gold is a good high conductor of electricity.
Yeah.
And along with water, there's a gold tap right at the cap of the pyramids. It's gold, and then there's water at its base.
Wow.
You look along the lines, at one end you've got the parliament, the National Assembly. At the other end you've got a church. At the other end of the line, opposite the Place de la Concorde, you've got this old Catholic church. The other direction, and the opera house, it's like everything is lined up in this grid pattern, and at every corner, you know, I said to the people I was with, this is amazing. Look, at every point, there was a little, some kind of gold worked into the structure. So around the circle and through the lines, there was gold at every point. So what is this but conducting electricity, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, and you see the same thing, exactly the same thing in Vatican Square in Rome.
And I mean, and what people really aren't getting is, you know, let's say you have a congregation of people that come in on a Sunday, somebody has just been buried, there was a funeral there the day before, there were tons of people sobbing and sad and sorrowful and hysterical, and, mm-hmm. and that energy is still there. And they're using that, folks.
They feed off it. I think that's the thing we understand now.
Yeah.
They're feeding off fear and grief. And every time the Catholic looks up and see a man impaled on a piece of wood, it feeds that fear.
Yeah.
And, you know, that shame. And it's interesting when you do more research into the original Hebrew in the Old Testament, the translation of the so-called fall of man is very different than what's in the English translation. It's it basically talks about an ancient race called the Elohim who destroy the earth. It's not creating, it's destroying the earth. And out of that, they create a slave race called man. And then the serpent, which was a symbol of wisdom and beauty in the ancient Near East, the serpent comes and liberates mankind and gives them knowledge of who they are, right?
Right.
But the church interprets that as a bad thing. You're not supposed to become self-aware, right?
Yeah. Well, how do you decipher, because I know you're a big proponent of the Bible, do you agree that much of the Bible has been rewritten and reconfigured?
Totally.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. I mean, a lot of it is designed to, when you look at the origin of this, the Bible was a completely political document. It was created originally what they call the Vulgate, which is the Latin translation from the Hebrew and the Greek, the officially approved Catholic Bible in the fourth and fifth century. They edited out all the existing Gospels, the Gospel of Mary Magdalene, the Gnostics, Thomas, all of that, right out. And in one of my congregations, I used to bring in the Gospel of Mary and I would read it. And it talked about wisdom and the secret teachings of Jesus and the gnosis, the secret knowledge. And it blew people away. Like they said, is that the Bible? I said, yeah, well, it was part of the teachings. They were just censored out. And when you go back, you see a totally different story when you kind of broaden your view beyond just, what people consider normally the Bible.
Do you agree there has been a lot of scuttlebutt lately as to the fact that Christ was possibly, his death was possibly around that year of 400? Have you heard anything about that?
No, I hadn't heard about that. No.
Yeah, that's been kind of rotating around the internet, but I haven't done a lot of digging to see, what's behind that whole thing. But I wanted to ask you, what is your opinion about the seal of the Catholic Church? How does the Catholic Church, there's a lot of discussion right now about how we get sealed by the religions, okay? And, of course, that I think is in prophecy, right, within the New Testament.
Well, it's within that. It's partly, it's like in anthropology when you study different religions and making people sick through magic can only happen when the person believes in the magic in the first place, right?
Mm-hmm.
Similarly, you find with this whole thing with the Catholic religion, it's they fervently have to believe, first of all, that the Pope has something to do with God. And there's all that whole fear created around it. But at kind of a legal level, the argument has been made that when somebody is baptized, it's part of the incorporation. It's like when you register your child at birth. And part of the argument is that the Vatican actually ends up owning all of those baptisms as legal documents. So it's kind of like the counterpart of in the law when this corporate this corporate entity is created in your name, right?
Mm-hmm.
That the government can then make money off. Similarly, the way the church views it is they're making spiritual capital off every baptism. So that's why they freaked out when other churches baptized, because they're cutting into their franchise, right?
Wow.
And, that's how they literally believe they control people's souls. They think they're God. I mean, and because they're God, they can kill children, they can commit any kind of atrocity, and they're not accountable.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I mean, it's the most evil thing that's ever existed on our planet.
I agree with you. Now, how does the Black Sun fit into this whole scheme?
Do you mean the Black Pope, or?
Yeah, there's apparently a lot of reference to the Black Sun with the Illuminati, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering, is there some sort of bridge between that and what the Vatican is following?
I'm trying to read more about that. I know that, there's different interpretations of that, but we do know the Illuminati were in fact set up by the Jesuits, because it's in fact when they did the song and dance with the Vatican where they were actually banned for a number of years, like 30 years or something.
Right.
And during that period of time, in 1774, I believe, or 73, the Illuminati group created. And the symbol of the Illuminati is the same as the symbol of the Jesuits, the IHS and the sun. And part of it was that it was right in that period of time when the French Revolution, the American Revolution, it was breaking the monopoly on Catholic control of people's minds. And they needed, like, that was the whole Jesuit thing, and they were the bulldog, the Pope's private army, to wipe out any opposition. So I think the whole Illuminati thing and everything is connected to that. And it's funny, interesting that when we're tracing this child sacrifice network, the Ninth Circle, and that it's again and again this evidence we've been linking it to Jesuit sources, that it was in fact started by the Jesuits, believing that you captured the spiritual power of people through these rituals, right? The sacrifice, the killing of the newborn. I mean, it's believed that it gives them spiritual power.
And so all these people that are starting to show up, that are starting to give you evidence, are you finding more and more people becoming bolder and more courageous and finally coming forward?
Yeah.
With these atrocities?
Definitely. Now, you know, we created if you stay at anything long enough, you create an environment where people feel, you know, it's more legitimate to talk about. Like in Canada now, the corporate media even are talking about children dying in residential schools. Like, they came out the other day and admitted tens of thousands of children died, which I've been saying since 1998 from records.
Wow.
So it shows you eventually they admit the truth about something, but they spin it in their own way to make it look like, oh, yeah, well, we are releasing this. We're on top of it. We're doing what's right. That's the downside. The upside is that it then gives people the sense, oh, okay, it's legitimate to talk about this, and more eyewitnesses come forward. And we're finding the same thing that's happening with all this exposure about child rape and everything in the Catholic Church. It means, yeah, there's insiders that are coming forward now.
That is fantastic. You know, because I'm wondering, getting back to the Illuminati, I have heard that there is an Illuminati faction that is very much of the light. Do you agree with that? Have you run into that?
I ran into some people who, well, I guess it depends whether you, how you view it, but I would say, yeah, they operate in the institution and they believe that they can change it. And I don't agree with them. You know, I think you have to give right out and just get back into a direct, you know, relationship with what's good. You don't need this institution at all. But, you know, I haven't met people like that for sure, including in Rome. They've been useful in terms of providing information. Now, how valid the information is, sometimes, you know, you need other sources to confirm it. But I see that happening. Like any elite, they have to create the impression they're monolithic and all-powerful, when in fact they're not. They have factions. They have differences. They're at each other's throats all the time. They just hide that from us. And this is beginning when these crisis starts in the system. You get palace coups happening. That's one of the reasons that Ratzinger had to step down for a while. But, you know, it's really not so much the individuals as the beast itself. What are we talking about when we say these institutions?
Well, the only reason I say that, I remember, gosh, this goes back years ago. I saw a bootlegged video from a friend of mine, and it was filmed in Italy, and the individual, you could not see his face or anything like that, but he was basically coming out and saying, look, you know, there is this other Illuminati faction that wants to bring forth the truth. And he basically at that point said, just watch us because it's going to start happening. And I kind of thought to myself, well, you know, everybody sooner or later, with the amount of light that's coming onto the planet, you know, you have to make a choice. Are you going to stay with this rotten core, you know, institution? I mean, I agree with you. It's got to be brought down, decimated, boom, done, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems to me like they would be a positive vehicle for some of the inside information if they truly are desiring to take this from the inside out.
Oh, for sure. And, in fact, we've been able to use people like that in the court cases. You know, people give us documents. The guy who leaked that Kremlin policy to the London newspaper and all that, that was in Latin, buried in the secret archives of the Vatican, but somebody inside leaked it to the London Observer. So there's many agendas going on. That's the thing. And you know, it's like Sun Tzu says in The Art of War, it's about maneuver.
Isn't it true, Kevin, that's a good point. There's so many maneuvers going on. I love that because things are very murky for everybody right now. Because everything is coming to the surface, every opinion, every perception, every piece of truth, and we're really being faced with an overwhelming need to not only discern, but to choose, like, okay, does that resonate? Do I believe that? Do I feel that resonates to my core? I mean, this is a very challenging time for all of us.
It really is, and it's, you know, it's kind of like a birth process, you know, it can be violent and bloody, but it's like, it's a time of disorientation where people, enormous amount of cynicism and unwillingness to believe that, you know, something good can really exist. I find that that's part of the difficulty in the work I do. You're immediately disbelieved.
Yeah.
About everything, even when you've got hard evidence, even when you've got your own life experience to put forward and say, look, like something I get all the time is, well, how come he's still alive? Like, why haven't they knocked him off by now? Well, the first thing I say to people is, well, they have. They tried killing me in many ways. They did everything possible short of a bullet. And when you persist through all of that, they realize, okay, killing this guy now is going to be too obvious. Let's just let him operate, keep monitoring what he does, try to discredit the hell out of him so nobody listens to him. And that's still what they're doing with me. But what my problem isn't the opposition. The problem I have is with a lot of the people around us who can't make the step from even saying, okay, yeah, it's true what you're saying, to actually doing something concrete about it.
Yeah.
It's almost like people have lost the ability to act on what they know is true.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know whether you could say it's something they're doing to our minds to do that or whatever, but it's really noticeable now. I remember when I first got involved in activism, if you like, back in the 70s, people were very different then. I mean, you'd call a meeting and 200 people would show up. Now you'd be lucky to get 10, you know,
yeah,
on a lot of these issues, you know.
Well, and, you know, not to make an excuse for humanity, but we have definitely been deluged with every step of the way, a poison, a contaminant, a toxin, you know, a ELF, a harp wave, I mean, you name it. And they've definitely succeeded in quelling the beast, so to speak, the monster, you know. I mean, once people start getting beyond this, and it is happening, I really truly believe it's happening, but once we start all really stepping into our power, remembering who we really are, we're unstoppable. And we're actually at that point. We really truly are at that point. We just don't realize it yet.
Yeah, I think so. I agree. We're at the crossroads.
We really have reached that. I was going to say one other thing to you, and that is, I had a luncheon with someone yesterday, and I wanted to pass this on to you. I thought it was very interesting. And she has the ability, she's very clairvoyant, and she has the ability to see things that most people can't. And she said that it is becoming more and more common for her to walk around, and when she sees people and they're not paying attention to her seeing them, she says she sees no faces. And I said, well, wow, you know, what are you insinuating? She says, well, you know, they talk about the soulless ones walking the planet and that there's just, you know, there are a great deal of them. She says, now I'm starting to see it. And I said, well, how many are you actually seeing? She says, they're all over the place. Yeah. And then the minute that they think that she sees them, they put their face on.
Right.
And so this is definitely a time of really having to discern who's real and who's not, you know, who's coming from a position of sincere integrity. And, you know, I thank you for all that you do, Kevin. I mean, I really can't say it enough. Now, I know you, you need to get going here. So I wanted to ask you, is there any other announcement that you'd like to make or, let everybody know before we let you go?
Well, starting in late June, like I said, we're going to be ramping up the work again. And for people to follow ITCCS.org, and we're doing the community training now for the common law sheriffs and the positions in the courts. So if you want to be part of that, write me, hiddenfromhistory1@gmail.com. And, you know, like you just said, we have to recognize this is a spiritual battle ultimately. And if we don't have our integrity in our soul, then none of this work is going to be possible. So that's where we start. We always have to start within in recovering ourselves and resisting this continual force that's pushing us into, I have no better word, but just assimilation into a machine.
Yeah.
You know, into that soulless machine that they all want us part of. And my best remedy to that is to get out from the matrix completely. Turn off your machines, get out onto Mother Earth, and just sit there in bare feet on the earth, and you'll have a calmness and clarity that that Creator gives us.
Yeah.
And only then can we often know what to do. So I would say we have to keep that contact with the earth above all else, and with each other and with our children. Just keep what's normal and human at front and center, and that's how we're going to be empowered to do this work. So,
that's
I guess pretty obvious.
Thank you for that, because you're just reminding me I need to do that today.
Good.
It's a beautiful day here.
Yeah, it's nice out here. I'm in Florida right now. It's hot and clear, and I'm going to do that too.
Yeah. So now, where are you going next? What are your travel plans next?
Up through the Midwest. I'm working with some farmers in South Dakota who are trying to set up common law courts, going through Canada, and then taking a little bit of time off, and then late June back over to Europe and starting that whole cycle again. So,
are you still planning on coming down to my neck of the woods?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, I am. Down the West Coast, it'll either be before or after that, but it'll be sometime during the summer, but I'll certainly let you know.
Okay, cool. Cool, because I think a whole bunch of us are looking forward to doing a workshop with you. So.
Good. I look forward to that, too.
Yeah. Well, thank you. And I just want you to know, just keep me posted anytime you feel like you need some spiritual warriorship and support on an etheric level, because I really do feel we were very successful in sending a huge wave of support for you.
I really felt it, and I know it works. I've had constant proof of that in my life, and I just want to thank everybody who's so steadfast in sending that kind of love and spiritual protection around me and the people I work with. So thank you all, and I'll hope to see you all soon.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Kevin. We love you, and thanks, everybody, again, for tuning in to Galactic Connection. I'm just going to go ahead and put this interview directly up on the web, by the way, Kevin. I'm not going to wait for the BBS radio show, so you'll have this being aired today.
Thank you, Alexandra. I'll talk to you really soon.
Yeah, you too. I look forward to it. Take care.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye for now.